episode 223.
You know, I started from below the ground up. You know, I owe that all to my dad, and you know, he basically molded my work ethic and my drive for as perfect as one could get, you know, and trying to always be the best and do your best and, you know, think about the customer and, you know, try to think a couple steps ahead. So when you get there, you're thinking a few steps ahead of that. You know, that's been kind of my mantra from the beginning. And I owe that really all to my father.
I would say the same. I never told him I was going to work in the business. That wasn't the original plan. But I went to college for something else, but decided that that's what I wanted to do after that. And I'm very similar to Tom. You know, my dad definitely gave me a good foundation to build off of. When I did work there in high school, there were no shortcuts. It was, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock to 5, and you were there to be every day and do whatever was told.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers. Carm here, and you're in for a special treat. Here in episode 223, hear from three sons that are second and third generation family, talking about their family's businesses and their role with their dads. The episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on site, and on demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. And welcome to the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Yes, like Netflix for radio, it's available on demand, which means when you want and where you want to listen. Every episode has its own show notes page. Find this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E223. Hey, in just one sec, I'll set up this excellent interview and let you know of the fabulous bookend surprise. Hey, have you ever thought about the value the podcast brings to you? I hope you benefit in really big ways. It's my driving force to link people that need knowledge and want to affirm their strategies in a way that's easy to digest in your day-to-day life. When I first started my podcast, I didn't realize at the time, but I was ready to be embraced by a new type of community, a community that I've since found is made up of some of the most supportive and knowledgeable aftermarket people on the planet. And thanks for being part of it. Hey, a shout out to Rick Sharp, Tom Hamm, and Joby Hobbs for their new Facebook connection, and to Patrick Manzer, Vic Tarasic, and Jack Rosebruffer for their new LinkedIn connections. Hey, it's great to have you on board and connected. Now, here is the premise for today's episode and the episode to follow. Yes, this episode has a companion episode, which is number 224. My three guests have all been on the podcast before. I realized that these successful service professionals were all about family and working with their dads. The majority of the aftermarket is made up of family businesses. Now, they all have their rewards and a few challenges. So I contacted Gary Pontius Jr. from episode 197, Tom Palermo from episode 87, and Brett Beechler from episode 199, and I asked if they could be part of a round table about their family business dynamic, especially their role with their dads. To make it much more interesting, I asked Gary, Tom, and Brett if they could also get their dads to participate in their own standalone roundtable interview. You now get the benefit of the planning and an incredibly sincere interview from the three sons, and you can look forward to listening to episode 224 for the dad's interview. So many great talking points to share, like dad and son having many of the same leadership qualities that can also create certain challenges, how good family culture embraces the extended family, the employees, and if you want to succeed, you can't have it handed to you. The episode is a powerhouse of family wisdom and advice from three sons of our industry's top family businesses. Now here we go with Gary Pontius Jr., Brett Beechler, and Tom Palermo. Hey, welcome everyone to this very special podcast with a very distinguished roundtable. I have Tom Palermo.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Tom, a second generation. Now, that may be a clue to our episode here from Preferred Automotive Specialties, who's also a NAPA ASE Technician of the Year in 2015. I have Gary Pontius Jr. Hey, Gary.
Good afternoon.
Gary's from Toledo Auto Care in Toledo, Ohio. This year, celebrating their 100th anniversary of Toledo Auto Care. Oh, by the way, Tom Palermo was with me in episode 87, and Gary Pontius Jr. was with us in episode 197. Brett Beechler. Interestingly enough, Brett is the third generation of Beechler's Vehicle Care and Repair in Peoria, Illinois.
So the chances of me surviving are very slim.
It is. You know, I was about ready. I have this little thing up here. Third generation is failures 90%. Just the fact that you're here is an exciting thing. And we have proof, everyone. We have proof it works. And so really what we're here to talk about is generations. I've interviewed all these fine aftermarket professionals before. And what ended up, I got to find out a little bit about their families, and it was Tom Palermo and one of your people said, listen, you got to talk to Tom's dad, Joe, or you did. And I got in and I started to shoot the breeze with your dad, Joe, and I so enjoyed it. And then I started to hear about all the other dads. So this is the first of a two-part series, the family business of our automotive aftermarket. You are going to love what we have planned for you. So guys, you know, you probably did, like me, joined the family business as a very young age, and dad probably threw a broom in your hand and said, son, someday this will all be yours.
I remember being a, you know, four-year-old kid, you know, going to work with dad, sitting on the desk, you know, where he was writing work orders and, you know, kicking my legs and saying, you know, dad, one day I'm going to work for you. And then, you know, a few years went by and, you know, I've been working since in the business since I was, I don't know, 11, 12, whenever I was old enough that, you know, they let me come to work on a regular basis. And I remember my first day at work, my father brought me over to the manager and he said, this is my son, Tom. I want you to treat him extra special. I want you to give him the dirtiest, nastiest jobs you can find. And they did.
Micro.
And, yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm all the better for it. And I know it. And, you know, I started from below the ground up. You know, I owe that all to my dad, and you know, he basically molded my work ethic and my drive for as perfect as one could get, you know, and trying to always be the best and do your best, and you know, think about the customer, and you know, try to think a couple steps ahead, so when you get there, you're thinking a few steps ahead of that. You know, that's been kind of my mantra from the beginning, and I owe that really all to my father.
I would say the same. I never told him I was going to work in the business. That wasn't the original plan. But I went to college for something else, but decided that that's what I wanted to do after that. And I'm very similar to Tom. You know, my dad definitely gave me a good foundation to build off of. When I did work there in high school, there were no shortcuts. It was, you know, 8 o'clock to 5, and you were there to be every day and do whatever was told.
Mm-hmm. So work ethic, boy, that just probably rings so true. I do want to hear your story, Brett, but, you know, you just hit me. Again, I can relate so much to what you guys have done. When I look back, and I'm a boomer, guys. Maybe you guys could be my son, but I remember that work ethic piece coming on so strong. And I think I heard you, Tom, echo that. Brett, same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I came in the business. I was probably similar to Tom's story as I was 11, 12 years old. I was riding around in parts pickup truck, you know, when I was 6 and 7 years old. Got to, you know, the cool thing is, you know how your sensory is so tuned into all your memories? Mm-hmm. There are smells that I smell today that I smell. I'm like, that's what I smell when I walk into that parts store when I was 8 years yep. old, going with my mom or my dad to go pick up parts. And it just brings back so many good memories. And same deal. I started the business age 12, mowing lawns. You know, my dad's out there nitpicking, which I thought was nitpicking, but he's trying to build that work ethic and that attention to detail into me that has carried me through, you know, 30 plus, 40 plus years of working. And again, like Tom, I owe it all to my dad. He's instilled a lot of good things. He made a lot of examples out of me, but I think it's easier for our parents to make examples out of kids, especially that generation, than it is to say, you know, hey son, you got the wrong shoes on today, or you don't have your belt on right today. I'm like, all these guys don't have their belt on right today. Why are you talking to me like that? But I think it's easier for our parents to hone in on us and make an example.
I think our parents treated us just with a different expectation, and it was higher than we ever could see the top of that mountain.
Here's the point, though. When you get to the point in our business where you're leading like we all are, if they would have treated us the opposite, do you know where we would have been standing with our crew today? We would have had nothing.
You're 100% right. That is something that, you know, I'm sure, I instill in my children, and I've met a lot of really great people over the years being in this industry who have similar stories to ours, and who the expectations of that were put on them as well. And I tell you, some of the best people I've met in my life, I've met in this industry. Yeah. It seems as though there's a common theme really in this industry of our story to varying degrees. But that work ethic component is critical if you want to succeed. You're 100% right. If you want to succeed in this business, you know, you can't have it handed to you. You have to put in the work, and you've got to understand that, you know, you're never above washing a car, sweeping a floor, emptying a trash can, diagnosing a car, talking to a customer. You've got to be willing to put your best effort forward, whatever needs to be done.
Cleaning toilets.
I didn't want to bring that up, but yeah, you're right.
It helps gain the trust of, I think, the rest of the team as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And credibility.
Yep. Totally.
Yeah, if you're not willing to put in and do what needs to be done, why should somebody else do it? If you're not going to do it, you know, you have to lead from the front. That really is what it boils down to. And when people know that you're that way, when your employees know you're that way, it makes them want to be that way too. And then they kind of push each other to move in that direction. And if you have enough people there that are with that mindset, it becomes a true team event, and everybody's trying to help everybody out, to move in that direction. And it's, once you can, if you can get enough people together that are like-minded, there's nothing that can stop. There's nothing you can't do. It's the sky's the limit. And that's really the exciting part of this business for me is watching relationships with people, relationships with customers, relationships with my family, and seeing us all move in the same direction towards the same goal. That's really, for me, that's one of the biggest bright points of doing what I do and how I do it. It really, for me, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. I do want to go and make sure we set up the premise of our discussion. Not only do we want to hear your backgrounds, but we also know that there's generational differences in how dads and sons look at the business. They lead and manage differently. They have their own strengths and their own challenges. And I want to be sure we cover that. So one of the most important areas of good quality family leadership, son, dad, is to know your role and play to those strengths. Can you guys talk about that?
So know your role and play to your strengths. So my dad and I are very similar in many ways, but we're also very different in many ways. And kind of what we were just talking about as far as gaining the respect of the other team or the rest of the team as you grow through the business, him not giving me shortcuts helped build that with the rest of the team. So it wasn't like, oh, well, he's in his position because he's dad's son. I started out, you know, sweeping floors and then repairing gas tanks and then doing pickup and delivery and then, you know, just kind of work the way up. So that helped. But, you know, one thing that I definitely noticed early on is as I began to take over in the early 2000s, it was his team. And as time went on through turnover, because we manage two totally different ways, it became my team. And that was a big difference. We're just totally different in our leadership styles. And I think his was very good and appropriate for the time that he was leading it. But I think it was good. The timing was right for me to step in and have a different managerial style to take us then to the next level.
You were doing the hiring then.
Yes. And my managerial style and expectations were of the team and of team members were different than his. And there were some team members that weren't willing to be on that train. And so I had to find the right people to put on the bus.
Did any of them go back to your dad who he had hired and wish there had been or be wished it would be different?
No. Now, there's probably one component of that. I don't think it's really what you're asking, but I know early on, before I read How to Win Friends and Influence People, I may come across a little hard at times, different than my dad. And so there were a couple that that come to him and said, hey, listen, this ain't working. You know, it's either him or me. But through growth, I believe anybody can grow and can improve themselves and change and develop. And that's what I've done over the years. But still, there are certain standards and certain criteria that you need to meet and goals you need to hit and expectations that are there.
Thanks for sharing. How honest. Hey, Brett, roles, strengths.
Strengths, you know, it's interesting. My dad and I have some similar strengths. But our weaknesses, our opportunities, you know, early in the game, I was what you call Rammy. I'll be full confession. I'm ADHD and I have a lot of energy. And Gary knows that. Gary and I go to meetings, you know, three times a year with each other and we play off each other. But I've had to learn to harness that and not expect everybody else to be running at 100 miles an hour like me. I think that's one of the biggest tamers, I guess, if you call it, with me. You know, my dad and I have a little bit different philosophy. We talked about it on the previous show. I'm a little bit of an ROI guy. He's a little bit of a cost guy. And I think you need that mix between the two. And probably a little bit like Gary's story, my dad's kind of a, you know, get to know the guys type guy and a little bit buddy-ish with him, but he knows where to draw the line. And I'm probably a little bit on the other side where I really like the guys. I enjoy, you know, rubbing elbows with them, but at the same time, we got a job to do. We have to take care of the people who are funding our paychecks, and that's what I'm about. And that's where our leadership styles are a little bit different in a way, but at the same time, there are so many qualities that he and I resemble between the two of us. It's not even funny, probably too many, and that's where we tend to butt heads a little bit.
Brett, is he letting you front the business and you're out there making those decisions yet you may make something he doesn't appreciate? Do you guys talk about that behind the closed door?
Yeah, we talk about it behind closed doors. And, you know, Gary's been kind of part of some processes that we're attempting to improve here. And, you know, I do think there's a little bit of, you know, he's going to be 71 this year and there might be a little bit of trouble letting go from his standpoint. I think he knows full well and 100% that it's in good hands. But sometimes you do things a certain way. that you don't want to let go of that certain way. And trust me, I'm one that resembles that a little bit. When I figure something out and I know it's the best way to do it, by golly, you know, let me, and as I got finished reading the book, Start With Why by Simon Sinek, I'm learning to teach my people why we're doing the things we're doing, not the old school way of, I was like, here's a way to do it. And that's all there is to it. All right, I'll see you later. Bye. I want to be taught why. Why wouldn't my people that work with me want to be taught why?
Tom, I really want you to cover that, but I think we just opened up an interesting can here, and I want to crack that puppy open. Where does Dad fit in the business? And I think that's a critical piece. I want to yield that to you, Tom, because I think your dad comes in so many days a week. He likes his current role. Is how much is that on you, Tom, to make that transition?
My dad and I work together very well. It's similar to Brett. We think most of the way we're on the same page. When we disagree, we generally butt heads, like Brett was saying. He does with his dad, because, you know, when you have two people that are the same. But he and I, we have a really special relationship. We've been able to grow the business substantially over the last 10 to 15 years, to the point where he and I have taken on separate roles. I'm an operational guy. Okay, he takes care of the back office stuff, dealing with our sales team, who, you know, when they're going out to solicit accounts and things like that. So he's kind of works that end of the business. I'm working the operational side. I'm working with the technicians, the service director, the service advisors, all that. So what has happened is that, I guess technically my responsibility covers about 90% of the employees and of course all the operational day-to-day things, which gives him the opportunity to handle the back office stuff and be a little bit more, have the ability to kind of, you know, not worry about the mundane day-to-day things, and he can, you know, help expand the business even further. So we really rely a lot on each other. If I don't do what I do, he's not able to do what he does. And he comes in 4 days a week. You know, he comes in 10 o'clock in the morning, rolls out at 5. Sometimes he'll come in 3 days a week. With the wonders of technology, you don't always have to be there. It's not like it was 15, 20 years ago. So there's a lot of that stuff that he doesn't even necessarily need to be there. And you know, look, he built this business. Okay. He started in the late 70s. He went through a lot and he taught me a lot along the way. This has been his whole life. When I was a kid and he was working 6-7 days a week, I didn't get to see him that much. You know, as I got older and I got into the business, I'm a lucky guy, as Brett and Gary are. I get to see or talk to my father every day. My stepmother is also involved in the business. She handles doing the accounting and things like that. So I'm a lucky guy. I get to see my family just about every day. I talk to them every day. We're a team. You know, we're all moving in the same direction. And while he's not there 6 days a week where I might be, he's still able to do that, you know, and really help move the business forward. I mean, you know, we are a team. We really are a team.
Glad to hear that. Gary, in what Tom just described, that his dad's working in his wheelhouse. Obviously, it's what he wants to do, right, Tom, for the business? Mm-hmm. Just worry about the back office. He's probably so thankful. Tom, just handle it. Same with you, Gary. Is your dad working in his wheelhouse?
Oh, yeah, I would definitely say so. He's right where he wants to be at this point, which is good for him. Just like Tom said, he took this business from nothing. It was on the brink of closing and built it to help build it to what it is today. So he's the one that he watches numbers. We meet usually once a week or so for breakfast and talk over things. We talk over, you know, personnel issues. I mean, just any type of support, any type of bouncing ideas off of, you know, any of that type of stuff. He gives me full rein to do, you know, what I think is best, but he also is a good advisor for me.
Wow. Communications, trust, advisorship. I mean, isn't that the ultimate in a generational change?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this industry is so special. because our stories are not odd. There's a lot of people out there who are it's a family business with, doesn't necessarily have to be a son or a daughter. It could be a nephew or a cousin or something, but there's a lot, I come across a lot of family businesses. And really when you're in a family business, some people say, oh my gosh, what must it be like working for a family? Well, listen, it doesn't matter who you work for. There could be issues no matter what you do. When it's a family business, there's just something different about it because you have a common goal. You're moving in the same direction. You're focused on trying to do the best you can and do the best you can for your family in whole. That's where I really think this industry is special. Like I said, our three stories are very similar, but there's probably thousands of other stories similar to ours out there of sons or daughters or nephews or whatever who have come into a bit, brothers, that have come into this business together and really end up with a good story to tell and something to actually produce in their life, not just go to another job.
When you got good family culture, you got good family business. Is this true?
Absolutely.
So I interviewed just recently Stacia Hamp. Her episode was 217, father-daughter. And she's second gen. The dad was the people person. She was the ops. It almost sounds very much a little bit like you, Tom. And the culture of the business is such that it is an exciting family business to work for because the culture is so high, because it's family. Customers feel like family. Employees feel like family. And is that part of the point of our discussion here?
It is. And the employees know it and feel it as well. They really do. I can't tell you how many people, employees, have told me before their 90 days are up, it's just different here. It's just different. I like it. Or they'll tell me, I'm a different person since I started here. Well, good.
If you're in a family business, my experience has always been, and obviously you, Gary and Brett feel the same way, you treat everybody like family. Because you're working with family, so your employees become your family. When they're in pain or they suffer for some reason, you suffer. You try to help them. When they succeed or if they benefit from something, you're happy for them. You take your family and you expand it tenfold, 20-fold, however many employees you have. And I'm sure that Brett and Gary probably every morning when I pull into the parking lot, I park the car, I grab my coffee, I go to get out of the car. The first thing I do when I put my foot down on the ground is I say, okay, I've got 25 families that I have to take care of today. Mm-hmm. I got to make sure that the decisions I make are the correct decisions so that I don't negatively affect those families.
Exactly.
And when you think like that, or at least for me, when I think like that, it changes how you operate. It changes where your perspective is, because now you're not just thinking about yourself and your wife and your kids. You're thinking about, the driver, the tow truck driver's wife and kids, or the mechanic's wife and kids, or the service advisor's wife. It really broadens your responsibility. Now it does become a little bit of a weight, but it's, if you're that kind of person like we are, it's, you don't mind it and you actually take pride in it.
Yeah. That whole mouths to feed mental picture is so strong to develop your leadership skills when you know that you're responsible for so much more than just your world.
And Gary knows this. It helps push it back on my team. I mean, yeah, it's ultimately our responsibility, but one of my opportunity areas was leadership and delegation of certain things in my business. And it's a process. I'm still working on it. But you can't put so much pressure on yourself and say, it's my responsibility to feed these people. It's my responsibility to put inside these folks' heads that without you guys, we can't feed this entire team.
Right.
And because I think about the same thing Tom does every day. I'm like, somebody walked in my office today and I'm like, I got to feed all these. We're responsible to, fund these paychecks for these people. And I said, we got to do the right thing. And she's like, well, yeah, I never thought about it that way, but it's ultimately our responsibility. I mean, it is, but you still got a team of 20, 25 guys, gals around you that they've got to know that they've got to pull their weight. Otherwise, we're exhausted by the end of the day pushing this entire bus.
That leadership part, that's the fun part.
Yeah.
So I got a meeting tonight. I just want to throw this in because I think it's fun. We had a meeting tonight. It's my manager's meeting. And I'm working through it yesterday. And I'm like, hey, why don't I throw it out to the technicians? So I threw it out to them. And I said, hey, anybody that wants to come on. come join. So I have a technician coming. So the first thing we're going to do is play Hungry Hippos. Has anyone ever played Hungry Hippos with their
with my employees? No.
So we're going to play Hungry Hippos, and here's the point. We need to be hungry. Are we inbound focused or are we outbound focused? We want to be outbound focused. We don't want to be inbound focused and just wait for it to come in and sit on our rust on our laurels. That's what Brett's talking about there, is that everyone affects everybody. And so we're going to use the game Hungry Hippos to kind of talk about being outbound focused and go get it.
That's cool.
Gary's always good for that.
Yeah, right. I'm going to email you later.
You asked who wanted to come, but maybe do you have a monthly guest that you pick?
That's interesting. No, this is the first time that I've opened it up past the managers.
The leadership culture that you're working on and building, and maybe, if you will, that decision level in the company, not that the techs don't have a very important role, but the jobs are different. And you're really talking about their area of responsibility. Here I want to do an episode with techs and service writers. So you see where I'm going? It's such an interesting, do you understand, do you feel, do you empathize, do you understand?
That's important to getting people to move in the same direction. We cross-train our service advisors and our technicians just for that very reason, because how can a technician understand what it's like to have to deal with a customer issue or something like that if they have no idea what the service advisor has to go through getting parts together or talking to a customer or whatever? And on the same hand, how can the service advisor have any idea what the technician has to go through if he doesn't understand? Now, listen, do they have to become mechanics? No, but it's not that. It's an exposure to a different way of thinking.
Right.
And that we do that specifically for that reason, to help build the team. And it does work. It absolutely does work. If everybody's off in their own little corner, nobody moves forward. Right. You have to get everybody moving in the same direction. The only way you're going to do that, a lot of times, sometimes people get in their own little mode and that's where they want to stay. You got to get them out of their comfort zone, hence the Hungry, Hungry Hippos, which is a really cool idea. So, but it's that kind of thing that builds camaraderie and builds a team mentality. And if you're successful, you'll have a whole group of people moving in the same direction, and then you don't have to micromanage those people and make sure that the little things here and there are getting done. You just need to make sure that all the balls are just moving in the general same direction, and you have confidence in your people that they're doing the minuscule things that have to be done along the way to get those big things to move in that direction. So it's a good point, Gary. Very good point.
I call it the police officer ride along.
Yeah, right.
Like a good friend of mine is a police officer, and he loves it when people request to go on a ride along because it gives them their perspective of what they do all day long. There's so many things that they approach, and the same thing. We're kind of in a way blessed to have two buildings because they're separate, so we've had to use technology to communicate with each other. But my next implementation is to have my advisors every 30 minutes, one advisor go walk over there and just do a walkthrough. Hey, how's everything going here? Hey, let me show you something while you're here. Yep. We get that a lot when we walk over to that building. Let me show you something while you're here. And what it does for my advisors, it helps them become better artists, painting pictures, taking pictures, taking photos, uploading photos, whatever the case may be. And it's incredible how much more alive they come back on. I get it. My one guy, Rick, he's a former technician. He gets it. The other new guy, Jose, gets it, but he doesn't get it. He doesn't know what he doesn't know until he goes over there and converses with him. And there's a bond that is built when they walk over there and they're standing shoulder to shoulder with the tech.
Yep.
And vice versa. If our techs walk back here and the phones are going off the hook and we got six people in our waiting area and they're like, oh, okay, this is what I do.
I'm gonna go back to that car. Yeah.
That's right. So it's all about getting each other's perspective.
I so loved where you guys went. Let me bring us back into the dad focus. I read a survey that said 51% of second gen, and I'm going to include the third gen, Brett, right in it. You'll take more risks than your dad in decision making in the company and in innovation and technology. Tell me your take on that.
I think it's because my dad reached out often. I mean, he's a pretty progressive guy when it comes to new things, implementation, new things. I mean, I look back, he had a really hard uphill battle with some of his tenured techs when he'd bring back new ideas. But, you know, I call Gary my business accountability partner. We account each other pretty well. I mean, we're constantly reading. We're constantly sharing books. Hey, you got to read this book. You got to read this book. And we're always out there just gnawing and clawing at different ways to do things in our business and studying other businesses like, you know, Southwest Airlines. They're huge. I don't know how a company that big has such a family atmosphere, but they do it. I'm like, if they can do it, we can do it.
Chick-fil-A.
No doubt about it. Chick-fil-A's going. Yeah, you're right. At Southwest, it is funny you say that because given the nature of some of the things that have happened over the last few months, everybody, and the first thing I thought of when I saw the bad press was, hey, you know what? Southwest doesn't do that, but that's because
the same thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Isn't it amazing? And I've only flown them a couple of times, but, you know, they have that reputation and they've been able to market that. You know, I think part of the reason that they're saying that about taking risk is because they're, you know, technology has advanced so much. There's so many more opportunities for us as shop owners to reach out and try new things. Now, much like Brett, my father is pretty progressive when it comes to change. He's a process improver. He really is. He wants to always improve. So he's never been afraid of change. But I think we have more opportunity now in this industry than we ever had before. Of the availability of change and trying new things and trying to move in a different direction and trying new ways to market and, you know, trying to go after different types of customers. So I think that's why that statistic is so high, is just by the nature of that.
Well, so I find it also interesting that all three of us have dads that are forward thinking, and our businesses are where they are, and we're two second and third generation. Maybe there's some theme to that, you know, as a result. But I wonder too if age doesn't have something to do with it. You know, the older you get, kind of the less you want to. I know when we bought this second location this year, my dad, he said, you know what, if you're into it, then let's do it. But he said, if you weren't here, I would not be doing this.
But my father said the same thing to me.
Stifle anything.
Yeah, you just bit off a big piece of risk that he wouldn't have done. Yeah. So 80% of studies show that the second generation will run the business different than dad did. And is that happening? And is he allowing you that freedom?
Define different.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends what the definition. I mean, the definition of different could mean a lot of things. I don't think, I'll just speak for myself, because my father has been progressive as far as change and always being willing to try something new and keep moving forward and never stagnate. That part won't change. You know, that part is not going to change. Will there be some kind of a nuance that maybe I might do a little different than he does, perhaps. But given the way we interact with each other, and the way, you know, and the roles that we have, we've kind of been, you know, we're able to make these decisions and not really, I mean, it's not necessary. We know what we're going to do before, you know, the other person does it. So if I see something, I can't tell you how many times I'll see something happening, you know, and go to talk to him about it. He's already thinking the same thing I am and probably has already instituted something to try to, you know, combat or change or whatever it is the issue is. So I don't know. There may be some businesses that would happen. There may be two people that are just completely different that will do two things in 100% different way. But I don't, for me anyway, I don't see that happening in a massive phase shift of how things are done.
Amazing how I was able to pull such, you know, really tight working son-dad team together here.
Well, you got to remember, I think our inspiration is, I mean, a good chunk of it is from our dads. I mean, I watched and observed and absorbed for years and years and years a dad who was very forward-thinking. So the probability that we were going to be that way was pretty high. I think everybody would probably agree with this. If I had a dad that was an old school, like, that's not the way we used to do it, we probably would have been the same way. And henceforth, we wouldn't be on shows like this and doing, you know, lunch and learns and car care clinics and writing books and, you know, doing everything we can to promote and progress our business. I mean, I could be wrong. I'm just making an anecdotal opinion stat here, but
I think you hit the nail right on the head.
Starts with our dads.
Yeah, Brad. If your dad sees you walking out of the shop with you know, Simon Sinek's Y under your, you know, on your stack of books that you're taking home, does he say, "Hey, what's in the book?"
No, not anymore. I think he's kind of like hit that plateau where he, you know, I'd given him the Jim Collins book, Good to Great, and he's, "Hey, it looks like a good book." And I think he's like totally content now with saying, "You do it all. I'm done. I want to kind of cruise through the rest of my career." And
so we're at this trust level with you and your dad, Tom, you too.
Oh yeah.
And Gary, you guys are just on that trust plane. And there is a, with the age of your dad, Brett, you said 70 or 71.
So he's 71 this year, yeah.
And I don't want to say this, there's no disrespect intended, but he's in a real good cruise mode, right? With you there. And that to me is the spoils of working so hard and bringing your transition. You know, they've got to take the credit for where you guys are in the business. As much as you're your own people, and you're different in your own ways, a big portion, I think, Tom, I think you said, a big portion of them is in you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I can speak for the three of us when I say we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for our fathers. They my dad is my hero. So, and I would go out on a limb and say that for Brett and Gary, that mm-hmm. they feel the same way. I really, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be where I am today without him. And I know that. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. And when I look back and I think about what he's been able to accomplish in his life and what he's provided for our family and for other families, it's inspiring. It really is inspiring. So,
what's interesting about my dad is he was one of these guys that said, you know, "Great, I'm happy to have you in the family business, but you're going to college." So it's funny now I can point the finger at him as mm-hmm. like, you were one of those parents that basically, this is part of the reason why we have a technician shortage. Yeah. But when you really look back on it, I don't believe, and maybe I don't know what I don't know, I don't believe you have to have 4 years of college to do what we're doing. Is it helpful? Does it help some analytical tools to develop inside of us? Maybe so. But the more I listen to shows like Entree Leader and podcasts like that, there are so many people that are making it through life that learn so much information because they're starting at age 10, 12. You know, it's like the one podcast I heard on there, this kid started a pooper scooper business. Mm-hmm. At the age of 14, he had thousands of dollars saved up. And his question to him was, "You're going to go to college?" And this kid like analytically said, "I don't believe I'm going to need college. I'm learning a ton about business and life, and I don't need to throw away $100,000 of my dollars to go do what I'm doing." I'm like, "Oh, how refreshing to see that."
Yeah.
So in that sense, I mean, we may not have needed college, but you know, it is what it is, and we are where we're at. But my dad was a big inspiration for you're going to get yourself up to the next level. And I think he knew in the back of his head, you know, I left for 4 years. I think he knew in the back of his head, he really wanted me to come back, but didn't want to say that. He wanted me to find out on my own. And I found out and was back in the business by the age of 26, 27 years old. And I haven't looked back since. I love coming into work every day. Love it.
Guys, family business. Does mother have a strong role?
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely. No. Not my, for me, it's my stepmother, but she takes care of the books. She's doing the P&L. She's, you know, taking care of the payroll. She's doing that kind of stuff. So, yeah, she's got a big role, and you know, and she keeps Dad and I moving in the right direction.
That's kind of where I was going. Thank you for saying that. Same there, Gary. Were you close to your mom, or are you close to your mom?
Oh, I've always been close to both my parents. Yeah.
Does she perform that role of being the rock occasionally?
Yeah, the rock, and sometimes we have to push that rock at times too. but yes,
remember you're being recorded
in both ways. It's truth is the only way to go.
That's right.
She'll be your biggest cheerleader, but yet, you know, she also can be a very grounding force. And yeah, so she does the same stuff as Tom's mom there. Yeah,
I love what you just said. Grounding force. So guys, in a family business, transitions just don't happen automatically. You don't just snap your fingers and transitions happen. Are you guys all at that talking point level, or there's something, you know, firmly documented that shows a succession plan?
We have a succession plan in place. We have part stock transfer completed. We've got all the writing in place. It's just a matter of now the big part is either taking out loans or some kind of a transfer of net profit as I grow the business and giving it to him, because ultimately I want him to be able to sit back, retire, and take rent payments and not have to come into work every day. But ours is in play, but it's not where I want it to be yet. I think there's a lot of like kind of watching everything that's going on, and but it could be further, and it needs to be further. So,
Tom, you guys working on something?
Well, to be honest with you, he still loves coming to work. It's his baby. He's coming in. I mean, we're a team. I mean, we really are a team. So as of this point, you know, we're moving along together. So that's where we are right now.
Any other family inside the business besides you guys?
For me, just my stepmom. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have an uncle who is kind of our lead diagnostician, and he's going to stay here until he retires. I went to lunch last month, and he said, "I'm not going anywhere. I want to stay until I retire." And he's 3 or 4 years younger than my dad, and he loves what he's doing, and he's really, really intelligent on cars. They were actually partners at one time in the business, and my dad ended up buying them out, and everything worked out for a reason. But I had a brother and a sister that came through the business. They're gone. They're doing their own thing. A couple of cousins that came through the business, they're gone doing their own thing. So I'm pretty much the last stand. And my daughter, who was the only one in the – I'm third generation. She'd be fourth generation. She's not overly interested in it. And that's okay. It's quite all right. That stuff happens in business. I'm willing to accept it. But I may be the last of the Beechlers.
Guys, the greatest advice your dad ever gave you.
The do unto others is that you'd have them do unto you. Always treat people with the utmost respect and honesty and integrity.
And once you read the Carnegie book, it all came to light. Yes.
Oh yeah. but in seriousness, yeah, that would probably be it.
The thing that sticks out in my mind would be not necessarily anything that he said to me, but the feeling that I get from him and how we've moved forward in our business, and that is just never give up. Always, you know, never walk away from, you know, never walk away, never give up. Always, you know, fight if you have to, do what you have to do, and get the job done. Sometimes the unspoken word can be as powerful as the spoken word. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
My dad, the biggest one is ethics. I never knew anything else when it came to ethics, and you know, Gary knows our numbers pretty well, and we are not a shop of. As much as inside my head, I'd love to be a, you know, $722 ARO, and my advisors are working on, you know, they're playing with 4 cars a day and things like that. You know, one of the things my dad said years ago, and it was really forward thinking, is he said, "Brett, we're in the business to build relationships, not to maximize our tickets every time somebody comes in." And I'm like, okay. And you do have to find a balance. You got to find a balance to go, how are we taking care of the customer best and the long-term solution to their car? But he has always been one like that, where it's not, you know, get the book out and you know, let me have your blank checkbook and let's go to town. Mm-hmm. And it's always about building long-term relationships. And, you know, we're headed hopefully toward $2 million this year. You know, I told you last time, Carmen, a radio show, last year we had 126 new customers every month. Something's going right with our formula, and I've got to believe that. And what he started decades ago in the philosophy of running a business. So we don't grow at 30% every year. And yeah, that'd be nice. But sometimes that fast growth pace is, you've got to be really on top of your leadership skills. You got to be on top of managing people and delegating things. Otherwise, you will bust at the seams and the wheels are going to fall off somewhere. But it can be done.
I hear it over and over again. And I don't mean to pull on episode 217 with Stacia Hamp. But it's always the most recent episodes are always circulating in my head. Her dad built a business on purpose before profits, people and purpose before profits, and they have a very successful business without having that focus. And basically, that's what you were saying. And I hear more and more of that. And I do believe that as I continue to do interviews in this great beloved aftermarket of ours, I keep hearing more. And more and more and more of that. And I think the shops that are going to be standing in these wonderful and challenging, exciting years ahead as technology is going to ramp its pace up quicker than ever. There's nothing to be afraid of if you've got that core culture working so well. Now, I've got one last question for you all. And there's an awful lot of millennials out there. I'm starting to interview a lot of millennial sons. I don't think you guys are at that cusp yet. I think you're a little older. There are some really smart ones coming up the ranks. So as second, third gen entrepreneurs, what advice can you give to a second gen millennial coming up in working with their dads and transition into their potential ownership?
My big one is humility and always be willing to learn from others, especially when they're young. It is, if you come into it like you know everything and please don't tell me anything, I do know everything, I promise you, you're going to get absolutely smoked. Yeah. I don't mean to sound so harsh about that, but come into it with your palms up going, okay, what can I learn today? What can I learn? Because I know they have wisdom. I know there's some very, very intelligent millennials out there. And I think Gary can, you can resonate with this. We came into it. I came into it like, oh, I kind of know some, but I was quickly humbled. Mm-hmm. And especially being around this industry, it can humble you pretty quickly. And just go into it like a sponge, like, man, I want to learn, because people love to teach people like that. And you will learn, you know, it's like the bell curve. You will learn at an exponential rate. I can assure you of that. So that's my two cents.
To continue on that, patience is something that they're going to have to, you know, we live in a push button society. I push a button, something happens. I get my reward when I push that button. This industry is not quite like that. You have to be willing to learn. You have to be willing to let other people teach you, but you also have to understand that it's not going to come right away. You got to be patient. If it doesn't happen right away, you can't just try to move on to something else. Cause this is true in life. If you keep doing that, you keep bouncing around, you're never going to find your niche. You're never going to find your home. You've got to be patient. You've got to put the time in, and you've got to, like Brett said, you got to be willing to learn. Definitely.
Gary?
That was it. I mean, I can just start talking about leadership things, but as far as, you know, for millennial stuff, that's it, man. I mean, that's being open to learning, coming in humble, that you don't know it all, and then being a sponge to absorb it in, and then being patient that you're not ahead of, you know, trying to get ahead of everything. That's yeah. I mean, if somebody came in and did that, it would be a path to success.
It's amazing how you all are on the same page with humility, always be learning, and have the patience to invest the time to let it all sink in and to learn from it and write it, and having those bing, those aha moments, those 2 a.m. wake-ups, those are important. You have to have them, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Invest your idle time wisely. That's what I tell people. And, you know, sometimes it's doing exercise, doing whatever, but try to minimize the amount of time you sit there and watch TV. Mm. I think that's a huge that's a huge choice for everybody every night.
Yeah.
And I know there's times I could probably sit there for 3-4 hours and watch TV. I'm like, no, I got a book over here calling my name.
Screen time.
Choose to move myself forward and not make myself an idol.
You know what's so interesting? If you don't watch your show, and I don't have any anymore, maybe I used to in the 70s, but if you don't watch your show, you can catch it at any time, at any place you ever want to. In today's world, it's not like, oh, it's a crisis and you'll never see it again for a year, if that's the case. But I also agree that the boob tube is getting to be nothing but commercials. You know, when you think about content, you go and you watch an hour show and you get a half hour worth of content. I'm sorry we're going off on a tangent, guys, but let me burn this, okay?
You're 100% right, though.
Let me burn this. And maybe there's a lesson about the automotive aftermarket. Watch an hour-long show, be it even a documentary type of program. They could tell you everything that they wanted to tell you in a half hour, but they seem to burn an hour of your time to give you a 20-minute story. Every time you come back from a commercial, they have to tell you what you just watched. And am I that crazy? Do I have to have that level of repetition?
There's an interesting lesson to be learned from that, though. That they have to cram, you know, 20 minutes of content or half hour content, whatever, of something valuable into an hour, and the rest of it is all marketing. And really, when you think about it, what do we do when we see that marketing? If it's DVR'd or if it's on whatever, we fast forward past it.
Yes,
so we it's a good lesson to learn, because there is such a thing as over marketing. You can saturate marketing and do too much and just become noise. So, you know, it kind of fits, you know, Carm, where, you know, you say to yourself, okay, well, where do I want to focus my marketing, and how much of it do I want to do, and do I want to, and don't do too much, because if you push too hard, you drive people away as if you didn't do anything, you know, when they just didn't show up. So that's a good point. You make a good point, Carm.
If you're going to have to be a perpetual student and you're going to always be learning, be patient while you absorb and you play and you practice what you learn, you still have to continue to go to the trough. And like you said, Brent, it needs to be focused. It needs to be, you know, you got to have some quality stuff. But thank you so much for letting us go there. You guys just brought some incredible wisdom as second gen, third gen sons. We are going to do another show with your dads. And I am so excited. We've been working on this for about a month, trying to pull it off and to schedule it. In a week, we are going to sit down and you're going to help pull off a dad interview. I am, now that I have this, I am so excited to have them come on and to talk maybe a little bit about you guys, but a whole lot about their career and how they see their transition and how they see the family business. So thank you, Tom Palermo from Preferred Automotive Specialties, who we'll hear from his dad, Joe, in the next episode. Thanks to Gary Pontius Jr. from Toledo Auto Care in Toledo, Ohio. We'll have his dad, Gary Pontius Sr., in the next show. And Brett Beechler, third generation from Beechler's Vehicle Care and Repair in Peoria, Illinois. And we'll have dad, Terry, with us in the next show. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, aftermarketers, thank you so much for joining us. This is, without a doubt, an episode that would be on my must-listen-to-again list. So much there. Inspirational, profound, and you can really do something with the wisdom shared. Family dynamics is so rewarding and can also have their challenges. However, if you make it work, the results are so personally gratifying. The show notes for today's Sons interview can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E223. And don't forget, the Dad's interview is episode 224. I love to hear from you. Any questions or comments, email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz or head over to the contact page on the website. Now, don't forget to download the podcast app. It's free on the App Store. Just search for Remarkable Results Radio and have every episode right at your fingertips. And don't forget, you can also listen on Apple Podcast, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spreaker, and so many other podcast platforms. You are truly an important reason I bring this library of interviews, this treasure of powerful content. I hope you're profiting from the wisdom and insights found in each episode. Hey, favor time, please tell a friend about the podcast. This is an excellent one to share. Don't keep it a secret. And don't forget, we're working together to make all ships rise. Thanks for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.